Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With one out, the pitch, the runner goes from first. There's a long one. Left field. It's a goner out of Wrigley Field. Joel Pozo with a pinch three home run. Unbelievable.
Cardinals baseball picks back up tomorrow. The baseball season in general resumes tomorrow after the All-Star break. Cardinals will be in Arizona. They right now game and a half back in the wild card race, and they're pretty far behind right now. The Chicago Cubs for first place in the division. We're going to talk a little baseball right now. What's to come in the second half and what he sees happening here is Jesse Rogers, who covers Major League Baseball for ESPN and ESPN.com, and he's with us on KMOX. Hi, Jesse.
Hello. Good to be with you guys. What's happening?
Hey, so you tell us what's happening in this Central Division race. I've been saying the Cubs are the best team in the division, but now here come the Brewers. I declared them dead weeks ago, and now here they are again, doing what the Brewers typically do. So what do you see happening with this division?
Yeah, has any team been declared dead more often than the Brewers over the years? They seem to always rebound, whether they lose guys like Corbin Burns or Brandon Woodruff turn injury, who's now back. They know what they're doing, and I think the Milwaukee Brewers are really doing a great job at leaning into the new roles. Like, speed and defense matters more now than it did a few years ago. Well, that's Milwaukee's brand. And so they righted the ship back in May, basically, late May, honestly. They were game under on Memorial Day, and they've been on a run since then. Offensively and on the mound, they do a good job, and Mizorowski's been a great addition there. I mean, the division is incredible in some ways. The run differential, if you add it all up, just amazing. It's as good as you're going to find in baseball, to be honest. I think it's the best run differential at the All-Star break in any division in the National League since they went to these divisions. It's a really good division, which I don't think a lot of people expected. I don't think the Cubs will be overtaken by the Brewers, but I think they will be pushed by them. I think St. Louis has already really played better than anyone thought, and I think they can stay in that wild card race, but I'm not sure they can move ahead of Milwaukee or Chicago. I kind of see the division playing out the way it looks right now. Cincinnati probably has a run in them. They have a young, good starting staff and an offense that's getting a little bit better. So I could see the Cardinals and Reds kind of fighting for a wild card spot, but I'm not sure if either one's going to get one, to be honest. It's going to be very interesting, you know, after the top of the division there, what happens behind it.
My guess, and I think the Cardinals can go one of multiple ways at the deadline and the trade deadline coming up here in less than 2 weeks. And I think it's most likely they stick with what they have. I don't know. Maybe they trade away. I don't think they're making any acquisitions. That's at least my contention. What do you think they will do? My feeling is the Cubs are going to be aggressive. The Brewers might do something to add. I don't think the Cardinals are in that space, though. What do you think?
No, I think that's a pretty good analysis. Remember what this season was about, letting their young players have the runway to produce and let the chips fall where they may. Well, they've produced enough, along with the veterans, to be in the hunt. But I don't think they're going to change or deviate from that. They could add on the edges. You know, Eric Fetty might get replaced, but you have McGreevy there. Maybe add a little bit more depth because you can't make changes in August and September. So, look, you're in the hunt. You can't do zero. But I agree with you in terms of the big, big moves. I don't think the Cardinals are in that space right now. The Cubs certainly are. You know, John Mozeliak is in the last year of his career here. So I think they would like to win for him. Well, in the Cubs' case, Jed Hoyer, who's in charge there, is in the last year of his contract. So they have to win for him, in a sense, because he wants a new deal. I think the biggest question with the Cardinals would be if they do a little buy-sell And the sell would be Ryan Helsley. Like, that's the guy, even though he's not having the all-star season he had last year, closers can get you something at this time of year. So if some team comes to St. Louis and just loves Ryan Helsley, offering the right prospect, that will be interesting. Because that is a situation where it's not ideal to trade your closer, but you could still compete and find an in-house replacement for 2 months. And my point is, it doesn't mean you're ripping your part of team if you trade your closer. It certainly is harder to compete. So I am interested to see if the Cardinals do a little buy-sell, but I agree with you. I don't think they're going, you know, chips all in.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting looking at this team. When you're looking at the Cardinals, where you stand kind of depends on where you sit. It's all about perspective. If you went into the season thinking the team's not going to be that great, not that competitive, not going to make the playoffs, they're actually doing pretty darn well. But suddenly, if they're good enough where you start to think these guys could make the playoffs, they don't look as good. You start to see all of their weak points and all the reasons why they won't make the playoffs. So it kind of depends on which perspective you're viewing the team from. And if you agree that the Cardinals, if they're going to make this push for a wild card, they're going to do it with the team that they have. I'm kind of picturing the Bugs Bunny cartoon where the wagon, like they're trying to hold all the wheels on as the wagon keeps moving forward. Is that where this team is at, where every area could use a boost, but hopefully together they get the job done? Or are you looking at one big area, like starting pitching, that you think might be the biggest problem?
Yeah, they're interesting in that they don't do anything spectacularly well, but they're also not terrible in any area. Like, they're mid-pack in a lot of areas, maybe a little bit better on defense than people thought, that kind of stuff. Yeah, the back end now with Fetty and Michaelis blown up a little bit, that could use some help. You know, teams, and I don't know if all teams do this, but most at least look at their percentages, and there's internal percentages. We on the outside have external places like Fangraphs to look at. The Cardinals have a 28.8% chance of making the playoffs. So it's kind of getting to your point that they're kind of in it. That's not awful. It's also not great, only 30%. So you're a little bit in between, but you have to remember what their season was about first and foremost. Setting Hein Bloom up with information. What do we have here at the end of the year? And if you start making wholesale changes just to increase those percentages by 5 or 6%, that's probably a mistake. So it goes back to your point of kind of, okay, 30% chance. We'll add a little bit here and there just because you have to. You got to give your clubhouse a chance. But we can't go from 30% to 80% by the end of this month. And so I think that's the sort of calculus here. Yeah, let's keep going. We got a shot. Let's add a little bit. But what are we going to do? We have a 0.9% chance of winning the World Series. We're not going to deviate from our plan.
Jesse, as you know, when a baseball team is not as good as the fan base wants it to be, the first thing they do is point to the manager. And Ollie Marmol's gotten a lot of criticism this year. From a national perspective, how do people around the game feel he has done as the manager of this 2025 team?
Well, that's funny because I would be more critical of Ollie in past years. This year, he was given an exact goal, and he from day one had to walk a fine line. I was at spring training, long media sessions with him, trying to figure out exactly what this plan was to maybe sort of kind of compete in Mozeliak's last year, but also to give that runway I talked about so Hein Bloom can take over with you know, information at hand. I think he's done a pretty good job. Look, because I don't watch every single game and every single move, it's so interesting. You know, as soon as a new manager comes in that you like, you're going to start disliking him on day one because you start to see what you think are warts. But what you mostly think are warts as a fan are just day-to-day 50-50 decisions that can go either way, or 51-49, and maybe he chose the 49% decision and it didn't work, or maybe it does work. So, I I'm not watching Ollie Marmol's warts every day. I'm watching this plan from the beginning, which was a difficult one, and they're in the hunt, and they're in their hunt. So I'd be more critical in past years than this year for sure.
And what should Cardinals fans be excited about, if at all, about Hein Bloom when he does finally take over?
That's a good question. Obviously, the track record in Boston wasn't great. but he's got some pedigree from where he was before that. I do think it's an unusually beneficial situation to have a guy incoming and not the day-to-day pressure to make those big decisions, and while the outgoing guy gets to do that. Bloom is behind the scenes looking to, you know, he's already implemented some things, I think, or will be restructuring some things behind the scenes, player development, drafting. The Cardinals have been at the forefront or been public and very honest about, you know, the old ways weren't working anymore. We have to try something new. I think they've been very good, especially Mozeliak, in being honest about that. So the ability for him to do that for a couple of years now, while John makes the day-to-day decisions, I think is extremely beneficial. I think that'd be great for every franchise to do, but it just wouldn't work because most guys don't know when they're going to retire. The team retires them, you know what I mean, instead of choosing when you're going to retire. So I think that he's going to get a head start, and he already has one. Now, as far as what he'll do when he takes over, like I said, the track record in Boston maybe wasn't great, but sometimes in that second or third stop, you've learned enough that things can go a little bit better. So I think you got to give him a chance and hope that this year or two with him in the organization really is helpful.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, and this is a very this is something I'm not sure baseball fans are paying close enough attention to yet, but a year from December, so 2026 is when the CBA expires, and there's this growing feeling that there's going to be a work stoppage that happens. Owners obviously want a salary cap. Players, the union does not want it. Mike DeCourcy wrote about that the union has it wrong when it comes to not wanting a salary cap. What do you suppose is going to happen with that, and are we going to have a work stoppage in a year and a half?
I mean, the answer is probably, but with we're so far out that you could talk tough on each side right now, but then when you get in the room, you might have to find that compromise. The problem is the sides don't really view themselves as a partnership like some of the other, you know, professional leagues do. It's been acrimonious for a while now, I guess maybe since COVID or before. So there's all sorts of layers to it. They're not starting from a good place, right? That's the bottom line. They're not starting from a good place. Now, to talk about a salary cap real quick, because we could do an hour on this, I think every time there's a new CBA, owners float this out there. I think they're always looking for that tipping point where fans really get on their side, media gets on their I think they think this could be the deal. Their next tipping point is what? The Dodgers outspending everybody by maybe billions when it all is said and done. So, like, they're always looking for that. What can they rally around? I think, honestly, quietly, the league loves that the Dodgers are doing this because, again, it puts that payroll disparity front and center. And as much as most of us want to blame some of those cheap owners, I think we all rationally do see the fact that the Dodgers bring in so much more money and can spend so much more money. It does maybe become unfair for some of the smaller markets, even if those smaller markets can spend more. So I think that they're looking for that rallying cry from the outside world to get that salary cap. The question is, can they get there, or will the union stand strong like they always have when it comes to a cap? And that's why there's likely a stoppage. But let's see. You know, there's an economic system with a cap that can make sense. There's also probably economic systems without a cap that could make sense. If you start from scratch, there's all sorts of things you can come up with to make sure competitive balance it can be closely achieved. You're not going to quite get there. The big markets in every sport seem to have an advantage in a lot of ways, but you can get closer than we're seeing right now.
Jesse Rogers, despite what people may tell you, I appreciate you. Thank you for being with us today.
Chris, I only did it because of your co-host there. Let's be honest.
What's her name?
What's her name? Go ahead, say it. Don't put Jesse in that position.
My guy.
Don't put Jesse in
that position.
Jesse,
you're the best.
You're the best. Take care. See ya.
Jesse Rogers, ESPN, covers Major League Baseball for ESPN and ESPN.com. We're going to have Major Garrett on the show at 10:30. And we have our question of the week.
I bet he hates you.
No, yeah, probably. It's my guy. All my guys hate me. Major Garrett at 10:30. We have a question of the week. You need to know about it, and we'll tell you how the voting is going so far next on KMOX.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can follow us on Twitter at ChrisAmyKMOX, where you can find...
have to.
Okay.
You must...
At
bad things will happen to you.
Oh, jeez.
You know that, right? If you don't follow us on Twitter at ChrisAmyKMOX, tell people what can happen to them.
Well, I don't feel that way.
Rashes?
Oh my gosh, we're getting
death can happen.
At 11 o'clock. At any rate, ChrisAmyKMOX, question of the week. Which is the better lake, Lake of the Ozarks or Table Rock Lake? The votes came in pretty heavy the first day or two. Then filter down, and I'm just saying we need to pick it back up. We need some more votes because we will be giving the results tomorrow. And right now, one of the lakes is running away with it.
I have no opinion of either lake.
I know, because this guy has never been to a lake.
Sorry, I'm not rich.
Yes. The lifestyles of the rich and famous. At Lake of the Ozarks in Branson, Missouri. But
the only people I know who go to the lake are so rich.
Yeah, like Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm. Steve. Yeah. So I don't know anything about those lakes.
Interesting.
Except a lot of dead bodies, allegedly. What was the number we were told that there was a grave site there?
Well, but that doesn't count. That's
1,600 graves they were unable to...
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about when we talk about dead bodies. That was when they built the Bagnell Dam in, what was it, 1921, something like that?
Sure.
1931. And they built it. And they made the Lake of the Ozarks. It was over some burial ground, I believe, like you said, 1600. But that's not what we're talking about. When we're talking about the bodies, we're talking about Party Cove, anybody you know would go there.
They don't just leave. Well, I do know people who go to Party. They don't just leave people when they die.
If you can't find them.
Do you think people are on
there are people who have not been found.
You think there's a boat tied up with another boat in that string of boats in the Party Cove?
Yeah. Oh, look and at this guy. Knows the details. Knows about tying
boats. I've seen photos.
Okay.
And somebody falls overboard from your boat and dies. You think the rest of the guys are like, oh, just keep partying.
If they're
He's
like
fine.
You, yes.
What? That's
if you
not,
picture,
doesn't,
you
no.
picture 100 ewes on a boat and somebody falls off, you're not going to stop the party.
No.
You like, oh, listen, I worked hard for this weekend. I came out here. I'm not going to end the party because some dingus got drunk and fell off a boat. You would not look for him.
That's a great point.
You would not. And if it's you and your who's your mean friends, you guys would not look for the body.
That's a great point.
Thank you.
But we are going to fish the body out at least and finish the party.
Oh, I don't think so. I think the next day you'd wake up and go, oh my gosh, wait, did Bob, Barry, whatever his name is.
You think I'm friends with any Bobs?
I know that's
actually
why
I have one Bob friend.
Do you have a Bob friend?
Yeah, he's from St. Louis.
What's the oldest sounding named friend that you have?
Carl. I don't know. I think it's Carl.
Matt, you're a young person. What's the oldest sounding friend that you have who's not actually old?
I don't have any old sounding friends.
Are all your friends Jaden and Braden? That's gross.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's the worst.
No, I've got lots of Nathans and Chris's and Daniels, normal names.
Well, those are pretty normal.
Yeah, but I don't have any old names.
You have any, like, Jocks and Kai?
No.
My brother and I have alter egos.
I've got Lance. Lance, I thought it was a cool name.
Lance?
Yeah.
Like Lance Hildebrand.
I don't know. Oh, I do. I know some Lances. That's not really an old name, though. It doesn't feel
cool
like it.
I don't think it's super old. Like, I don't think any Lances signed the Constitution.
No.
But
okay.
I think.
No,
I think
Lances. What's the oldest name who signed the Constitution?
Braden Johnson. I'll sign the Constitution. There's no Jadens and Bradens on the Constitution, I can tell you that. Someone did point out in 50 years, there are going to be a ton of, like, Grandpa Braden, Jaden, Aiden, Caden. Can you imagine that?
Grandma Kelsey's?
Kelsey. I thought Kelsey is a millennial name.
Well, that's pretty young.
The Gen Z is going to be Grandma Olivia's. A lot of Grandma Olivia's.
Robert is in Fenton and wants to join the show. Hello, Robert.
Good morning.
What's up?
Y'all are both way wrong on this lake thing.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
The absolute best lake,
yeah?
Period, is Bull Shoals. It goes from Missouri down into Arkansas. And the east end of the lake from Theodosia straight south down the center of the lake all the way to Arkansas. Places is 2 or 3 miles wide, big coves and arms coming off. If you want to not see another boat all day long, it's so easy to do on Bull Shoals.
Do you?
And I love that.
Well, Bull Robert, Shoals. Let me ask you this. Do you have to be rich to go there?
No.
Okay. All right.
I'm a little pickup camper.
Yeah.
I'm a little camper in back of my pickup. I got a bass tracker. I can stay anywhere and fish anywhere or do whatever. And Bull Shoals, Table Rock has like 750 about miles of shoreline. Bull Shoals almost twice that big, almost 1,400 miles of shoreline.
Robert, can I ask you a quick question? Sometimes you like the Bassmasters tournaments on TV. Is that where they go to Bull Shoals? Like where they fish in those coves or no?
They have some tournaments down there on the pro circuit, on the pro tour. One of my younger brothers who lived down there actually fished a couple times.
Really?
We boated some fish. It was a really difficult tournament the first year.
Well,
a lot of pro teams didn't even boat a single fish.
Wow.
We boated some fish in our little John boat.
Well, thank you for calling in, Robert, because I am looking at pictures now of Bull Shoals, and it is beautiful, and that would be my goal, is to see no one else. Like, when I hike, my goal is to go to a hike where I won't run into anyone else.
Yeah.
I think Bull Shoals is the lake for me.
It looks beautiful. All I heard was Robert has a camper and a boat, and he's trying to tell me he's not rich.
Hey, Jake.
Got to be rich to go to the lake.
Jake on YouTube says 100 Chris's on one boat. Would need a lot of hat racks and glasses cleaners.
So?
That'd be so many hats.
Dude, I have nowhere to put all my hats in my new place.
And once they start the boat, it would look like confetti. All the hats flying off.
I'll be giving people hats. Giving them away for free, for fun. Hey, you know who loves hats? Major Garrett. He's always wearing one on CBS News. Haven't you noticed? He's always wearing a Padres hat. When we come back, we're going to talk to the chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, Major Garrett, next on KMOX.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Major News with Major Garrett, our weekly conversation with CBS's chief Washington correspondent.
It's Thursday after 10:30, and it's time to talk to our guy, chief Washington correspondent for CBS News and host of The Takeout, CBS News 24/7. It is Major Garrett who joins the show today. Good morning, Major.
Good morning. How is everyone?
I think we're doing great, right?
We're doing pretty well.
How's everything in Washington?
Busy. As always, it's very busy.
I know. I just feel like a little bit of Major, like a little part of you on the inside dies every time we talk to you.
What's it like? This is a serious question. What is it like to love something so much? Because you do love, you know, politics and Washington, and you have reverence for all of these institutions, but also it's kind of dumb and exhausting. So how is that for you?
Look, I have been so fortunate in my career. When I grew up in San Diego, California, public school kid, Nobody in my family had any experience in journalism at all. I was captivated by both television and written journalism. Wondered one day if I could ever get a chance to be a reporter anywhere of any kind. And then that dream sort of became more ambitious. Maybe I could make it to Washington. And if I got to Washington, maybe I could hack it. Maybe someday I could cover one presidential campaign. Maybe I have a chance to write maybe one book in my life. Those were all the most expansive dreams of my childhood in San Diego. And I've got a chance to live not only all those that I could define back then, but far beyond that. So, yes, the work is hard. The flow of news is chaotic. I have developed an ability through many, many years in this industry to, as I tell all my colleagues, conserve my energy and be ready for that thing that happens at 4:30 in the afternoon that throws everything into complete and utter chaos, and you have to shift and pivot and think anew and create a different approach to what you were planning to do all day. I'm almost 63 years old. I've learned how to conserve energy to do that. So I am, by turns, exhilarated and exhausted by this work. But I've never stopped loving it, and I've never stopped believing in it. And when I think of awards in journalism, because there are lots of them handed out, I don't compete for them very much. I don't actually believe in them all that much. The award for me, personally, the thing that I value and treasure most is when someone will stop me anywhere, airport, train station, and say, I believe you. That's my award. And that's all I try to do.
Major, when you do look back at your career and all that you've covered, was there a better age or golden age of politics? Because I know time papers over the uglier cracks of our memories and leaves us with a cleaner finish. Was there a better time or smoother time?
So I will say this. There was a time in my career, the late 1990s, post Monica Lewinsky, when that was a very gnarled, nasty, aggressive, high-stakes battle over the future of the presidency. Was Bill Clinton going to resign over it? Republicans were going to drive him out. This impeachment saga, we hadn't seen an impeachment since Andrew Johnson, meaning we'd not seen one play out in the modern era of American communications and politics. After that, there was this sense going into 2000 with the rise of the internet, all the optimism, the end of the Cold War, this is pre-9/11, we had surpluses, we were buying down our national debt, there was a sort of genuine Republican-Democratic consensus around the utility of keeping our fiscal house in order. That was a time that felt optimistic, somewhat more coherently aligned, and certainly more aligned around the idea that the U.S. economy was strong, the federal fiscal picture was getting more responsible, more sustainable. That it was a time that felt to me like we were on the verge of something really good. The 2000 election comes, there's the recount. The recount begins to shake people's sense of things. How we vote, how we count votes, how we reconcile ourselves to this. Then 9/11 comes. It's a massive, massive tectonic shock, not only to our sense of national security, our sense of emotional commitment to America, our sense of what our role in the world is. How do we respond? How do we fight back? Non-state terrorism does not lend itself to uniforms or lines of sovereignty. We all learn that. Then we changed all of our security apparatus, and all the things began to curdle in a different direction. So if you're going to ask me, is there a time that felt better, more stable, more aligned, I would say it was that sort of 1999-2000 period where the optimism of the internet was almost all on one side. It's all going to be great. It's all going to be super. We're going to learn things and exchange things, and the economy's going to grow, and no one was afraid of divisiveness or social media or any of the downside risks of interconnectivity.
So I would say that's a period of time. It probably wasn't perfect. I'm sure it wasn't. But it felt better than the times before it, and certainly than the times after it.
So let's get to the current. The Senate mm-hmm. has approved this $9 billion worth mm-hmm. of cuts, and it's to public media and foreign aid. So now that this has just happened, what is the reaction to it?
That the president gets his way in the end. There were detractors. There were those who brought some last-minute changes, particularly in the Senate, to foreign aid that falls under a very specific designation, PEPFAR, which is a Bush, George W. Bush project created to expand the availability of AIDS-related drugs in Africa, dramatically reduced not only the incidence, but the death rate from AIDS in Africa, among the most successful foreign aid endeavors in the entire history of our country. Lots of Republicans wanted to save that. They preserved that. But the rest of the cuts, pretty much there. I've been in Washington, as you know, since 1990. Almost that entire time, Republicans have at one level or another circled the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and NPR as either foes, real or imagined, or someone who doesn't deserve federal, quote-unquote, largesse, meaning federal subsidies. Unsuccessful until now. They are going to get that now. So this long-running part of the conservative agenda, lasting nearly 30 years, if not more, is finally going to be brought to fruition. And that's another indicator that some issues that percolated for a long time in Washington but never got anywhere, Trump gets across the finish line.
Major, it's crazy that we are where we are when it comes to the Jeffrey Epstein case mm-hmm. and how it does seem to be the first time we've seen a true rift within the MAGA base. The Justice Department also recently filed Ghislaine Maxwell's prosecutor, Maureen Comey, who is the daughter of former FBI Director James Comey. Donald Trump did say, I don't want the support of anyone who is concerned about the Epstein files, called his supporters who were concerned about it weak. What is this yet another scandal that or rift that we'll forget in a couple of weeks, or is this something with staying power?
So when I was thinking and talking about this a week and a half ago with my staff on the takeout, I said, we have to ask ourselves this question. Will we be talking about the rift in the MAGA movement a week and a half from now? Because in my experience, those rifts don't last even a week. And if we're talking about it 2 weeks from now, then this is something different. And we're still talking about it. And it's not just you or me. The Breakfast Club talks about it. There was a joke about it on the ESPYs last night. It has percolated through popular culture for a couple of reasons. One, and we should never forget this, there were hundreds of victims of Jeffrey Epstein, and those victims suffered grievously. The Justice Department last week said there were more than 1,000. I had on my program earlier this week, the takeout, Julie K. Brown, the most aggressive investigative reporter in this space for the Miami Herald. I asked her, did that number surprise you? She said, yes. She was only aware of about 300. So it's a grand and grotesque number, and those victims are real, and they've suffered grievously. Some have been financially compensated, but none have obtained anything approximating justice. And that's a real issue, and everyone cares about that at some emotional and moral level. For the MAGA movement, Jeffrey Epstein was the embodiment of all that is noxious and, to their minds, repellent about elites protecting elites, politicos looking out for politicos, and then maybe this over-top layer of the intelligence community jumping in with some sort of mechanism to subvert justice or protect people. So it's all the things that MAGA is suspicious of or outright hates: politicos, elites, and the intelligence community. And they were under the impression that because, to their mind, Donald Trump can't be bought, had clashed with the intelligence community over and over, won more than he lost, that he alone, singularly, would bring justice and awareness and transparency to this process. And for now, and for 2 weeks now,
They have been dissatisfied with what they expected. And they expected it because they were told they were going to get it by Trump, by J.D. Vance, by Kash Patel, by Dan Bongino, by Pam Bondi. And they are not satisfied. And they are not going away. And they are not moving on. And that's why, for the first time since I started covering this movement in August of 2015, there appears to be a genuine, not transitory, but genuine rift.
It seems like the president has done a pretty big reversal on Ukraine, saying that they are, in fact, going to assist with weapons. And he's given Russia another ultimatum. And I think it's 50 days from now. So what?
No, 48 days. It was 50 days 2 days ago. Yeah.
OK. Yeah. So it's 48 days now. So, I mean, how is this going to play out here? Because I'm not really sure what to expect, considering the, you know, the reversal of opinion on it.
Yes. So on the program last night, I had former Vice President Mike Pence. He also said, by the way, joining a lot in the MAGA movement, full transparency, release all the files. That was interesting. That made news. I asked him about Ukraine, and he'd been long critical of Trump on Ukraine. And he said the president's turned around. He said isolationist voices have lost clout within the White House. Now, there is a distinctly Trumpian approach to this. It's not America sending the arms directly to Ukraine, which is the Biden policy. The arms we're going to get are going to get there, but Europe's going to buy them first, and they're going to flow through NATO. That means America gets paid and is not just donating, if you will, the arms. Trump needs a transaction. Always, always, always needs a transaction. And to his mind, Europe paying for it is better than us giving it. And I think many in the MAGA movement are probably satisfied with this. The most important part of this, though, is he now identifies the need for weapons in Ukraine to sustain the Ukrainian fight against Russia, a U.S. national security priority. That is not where he started his administration in January, not remotely close. This is a big U-turn, and it's a significant one. And it very well may change Russia's calculations. All week long, they've been saying, we don't care, we're not listening, we don't believe these threats. But weapons on the ground make the Ukrainians more lethal and make Russia's wartime aims more difficult, and that's a big shift.
Major Garrett, we appreciate talking to you every Thursday. Thank you once again, and we apologize in advance for when the Cardinals overtake the Padres in the wild card race. Just letting you know.
Hey, it's great for both cities. We got good ball clubs. It's going to be a great July, August, and September. I wish the Cardinals just enough success to finish one half game behind the Padres.
Yeah, so we know San Diego as a city longs to catch up with St. Louis.
Yeah, exactly.
They always look at us with envy, don't they?
They do look at us with envy.
Yes, we do. Yes, we are envious. I will admit it.
Thank you, Major.
See you guys.
Major Garrett, Chief Washington Correspondent for CBS News. Watch The Takeout. It is very good on CBS News 24/7, and Major is the best.
The best.
It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Well, alongside Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical. Yep. We've been embarking on 100 Acts of Kindness, also celebrating 100 years of KMOX radio here in St. Louis. And our charity of the week is the St. Louis Crisis Nursery. They do incredible work. I know, like I said, a couple of years ago, we talked to someone from the Crisis Nursery and how they needed volunteers to rock babies, which is so sweet, but they are there 24/7 for someone who might be experiencing sudden homelessness or an illness or an addiction or whatever it may be, whatever challenge, struggle you're going through. You can call their phone line 24/7. They are there to be with those children if the parents cannot.
Yeah, the phone number is 314-768-3201. 314-768-3201. You could just also go to crisisnurserykids.org. And I love that that you can, because when a crisis is happening, you cannot guarantee that it'll happen at noon.
I feel like it never does. I feel like
it's always in the middle of the night.
And also at 365 days a year. And as they say, this way, families in crisis have access to immediate non-judgmental crisis intervention resources and support. It's pretty incredible. 4,000 kids a year. 4,000
getting
babies,
helped by this
4,000 little ones being helped by St. Louis Crisis Nursery. You can go to crisisnurserykids.org to make a donation, to get involved, to volunteer. So very, very cool. And we'll actually be chatting with someone from St. Louis Crisis Nursery tomorrow.
Yeah. On Monday, by the way, it will be 39 years that they have been going strong. So I think that's just really, really cool.
Yeah.
So Molly Brown, you mentioned, will be talking to the CEO. That will be tomorrow. Just to give her an opportunity to give you a little more detail, the listener, on what the Crisis Nursery does. So we recommend you go to crisisnurserykids.org. You can donate straight there. There's a little button in the top right. You can click on it and make a donation. But this is a charity that is doing very, very good work.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So also yesterday with Rankin Jordan and their new golf program.
Yeah.
And or I shouldn't say new golf program, but they renamed the golf program. Kevin Korn Golf Academy. And some of the kids that Kevin had helped, for the first time when they were still in hospital beds. And he said, you know, the golf ball doesn't know if you're standing or sitting or lying down. The golf ball doesn't know if you only have one arm. The golf ball doesn't know that one of the kids, like that he helped, who had severe burns all over his body, didn't have any fingers, didn't have toes yet. And they were able to attach the golf club to this child's arm so that he could play golf as well. But some of the kids that he helped got better. Through the great care of Rankin Jordan, went to high school and played golf on their high school teams. How cool is that?
That's very good.
So the Kevin Korn Golf Academy at Rankin Jordan, very cool. And again, you can visit Rankin Jordan's website to donate, to volunteer, and the great work that they're doing there for, you know, kids who are dealing with some of the most complicated illnesses or physical issues.
And you know, we want you to continue to. We have multiple ways you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Chris Amy KMOX. You can text into the show at 314-436-7900. Leave a voice message on the Odyssey app. We'd like you to recognize somebody that you don't think is getting the recognition they deserve for good work they are doing. And there are a lot of people. And we talk about St. Louis being a charitable city, and it is very good in that regard.
Yeah.
In terms of that, there are a lot of people here who want to do good work and do good work, and a lot of them go unnoticed. So if you think there's somebody out there that deserves to be noticed, tell us about them.
And yes, we do want to hear from you, especially since at 11, we're going to be talking about someone who deserves to be noticed for the wrong reasons.
I love this
Tanya
lady, by the
Haddocks.
Way. I love this lady.
The chimp crazy lady. A judge has ordered that she be arrested. She failed to show up to court this week.
Free the chimp lady.
No, come on, man.
Free
you
chimp
have the
lady.
Worst campaigns.
What? I want to save our sheriff?
Save
I want to free the chimp lady? Save my sheriff.
You're the only one.
Well, but he is our sheriff. He's your sheriff, too. Amy Markscore's Chris Ranji. Final hour of the show is coming up next. Gas House Gang at 12 o'clock. Bernie Miklas and me, Chris Ranji, on KMOX.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.